Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.
National insurance goes up again, but not just for the rich. Bankers' bonuses are taxed, while all high earners lose more pension tax relief. And how green was my budget? We assess the value of eco-measures. All this to come in this week's special FT Money Show on the pre-budget report. I'm Matthew Vincent, and I'll be giving you the lowdown on all of these money matters in downloadable form with my colleagues from FT Money, Steve Lodge.
Hello.
And Tanya Poley.
Hello.
So let's start with the money news. This week, the Chancellor's pre-budget report introduced a new levy on bank bonuses, but left income tax rates unchanged. So was it just the rich getting bashed? Not if you look at the effect of new national insurance increases and the freezing of income tax allowances. The Chancellor announced an additional 0.5 percentage point increase to the employees' national insurance contribution, on top of the 0.5 percentage point increase announced in the budget back in April. And all of this is going to take effect in 18 months' time. In addition, the threshold at which 40% income tax kicks in has been frozen, and there'll be no increase in the personal tax-free allowance next year because the retail prices index was negative in September of this year. So, Steve, complicated. What's the net effect of all of it?
The net effect, Matthew, is more people are going to be paying higher rates because of this thing called fiscal drag. Freezing of allowances and freezing of thresholds means that any time you get a pay rise, ho-hum, or an increase in your income, you're going to be tend to shift into that higher band. Obviously, it's going to only affect people at the margin, but they're freezing basically all personal allowances and all tax bans for this coming tax year. It's something, of course, the Chancellor failed to mention in his 50-minute speech. They've said that if, and the underlying justification being that RPI is negative, so there's no need to index link it, then they're saying they might even do it next year if RPI remains negative. And the thing that the Chancellor did announce on income tax was that come 2012, he plans to freeze that threshold again. So that means everyone earning over about £43,000 in 2012, and of course a lot more people who are on less than that at the moment will be on more than that then, will be paying 40, but of course it won't be 40, it will be 40 plus the one of national insurance that you're already paying, plus the other one that's coming in 2011, so you'll be paying 42.
So in effect, the total tax take, because let's face it, national insurance is just taxed by another name,
indeed,
is going up. So some people will be paying 42. High earners earning more than £150,000, they'll be on 52% in 2011.
They'll be on 52, and they will see the 50% band, of course, from next April 2010. So they'll actually go to 51% at the absolute top end, that from the following year will go to 52%. So 52p in extra every pound.
But one thing I think that has been overlooked in some places is the fact that it's not just top earners who are affected by this. The national insurance changes are effectively a tax rise for anyone earning over £20,000.
Indeed, the Chancellor said he's protecting people who are earning under £20,000, and I think the Treasury was talking about a figure of 50 million workers being protected. Well, that's all very well, but a lot of listeners will be earning more than £20,000, of course, and anyone whose career improves or indeed gets a pay rise could find themselves above that £20,000 limit. But as you say, yes, the national insurance kicks in there, hence the talk of the Conservative talk about the new class warfare being everyone earning over £20,000 being at risk from a Labour government.
This is very much hitting middle income earners as well. Are there any winners out of any of the tax and national insurance changes?
Of course there are, Matthew. There's the grumbling pensioners who got a state pension rise of 2.5%. Which would be good.
Inflation is negative.
Inflation is negative. They still get a pay rise.
So they get a real terms increase of what? 4% almost?
Yes, exactly. It even doesn't do badly against the government's preferred measure of inflation, CPI. Now, in addition, national insurance is only levied on workers and self-employed people and indeed employers. So it doesn't hit people whose incomes are pension. And I don't think it hits actually people who are working who are over 65 either. And it doesn't hit another group as well, those horrible speculator buy-to-let types, because they are making their income they take their income purely as income and it's subject to income tax. But again, it's not subject to national insurance, or very rarely. I think it depends on how you structure your business. But for the standard buy-to-let landlord, the speculators of this world, they're not going to be hit by national insurance. And of course, they retain the 18% CGT. So in the round, us in the temple of work, Matthew, are paying for the mistakes of the usurers, the bankers. And who's getting away with it? The speculators and the grumbling oldies.
Exactly, as usual, we're in completely the wrong game doing this. But I think your point about capital gains tax is an interesting one. This gap now between, if you're a high earner, in 2011 you'll be paying 52% effectively, marginal rate, but if you flog off your buy-to-let property, assuming there isn't a change to capital gains tax, you'll be paying 18%. Do you reckon that this anomaly will have to be addressed if there's a budget before the next election?
I think it's certainly something that all parties have said there is an anomaly there. And the more people are seen to take advantage of it, the more they will come under pressure to take advantage. And you will hear exactly that sort of language. These people are speculators. They are the old Rackmans. Remember the Rackmans in the 60s? These are landlords. They're not really doing anything. They're just making money out of property and often out of other people's misery, of course, if you've ever been a tenant. So, yes, I think inevitably it will be addressed. So the message to buy-to-let landlords is enjoy it while it lasts, but if you made good profits, because of course if you haven't made a profit, the CGT rate's kind of irrelevant on the actual property itself. But if you have, and with the recent recovery in the housing market, there's an argument to consider cashing in before you do get whacked by a big CGT bill. And don't forget, you also get other tax breaks as well. Mortgage tax relief for buy-to-let mortgages. My God, we really are in the wrong game, aren't we?
We are in the wrong game. But if you're in the right game, you probably have about 6 months in which to take your gains at 18% before you start paying more tax and national insurance. Steve, thank you very much for that. And for more on the tax rises and how they will affect you on different levels of income, look out for Steve's article in this weekend's FT Money with the Weekend FT and online at ft.com/money. Still to come on the show, scrap your boiler and drive a tax-free electric car. We assess the Chancellor's eco-wheezes. First, though, the tax change is directed not just at bankers, but all high earners. In addition to the 50% levy on discretionary bonuses above £25,000, anyone earning more than £130,000 will potentially see their pension tax relief scaled back immediately. The inheritance tax nil rate band has also been frozen and some loopholes closed. But as ever, the rules are complex, so who better to explain them than our three wise tax experts? Richard Proctor of Grant Thornton, Paula Higgleton of Deloitte and Claire Evans of PwC. Richard, I suppose the big headline measure is this levy on bankers' bonuses, but it's actually a shorter term measure than it first seemed, isn't it?
That's correct, Matthew. If you believe the press release, the intention is that this will only apply from today until the 5th of April 2010. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of institutions looking at their contractual arrangements at the moment to see whether they can delay payment or delay the commitment, perhaps into the new era when this tax no longer applies.
Are you suggesting that they might look for ways around it? Surely not. But why would the measure only apply to April? What's the thinking behind this?
Well, they want to disincentivise the bonus culture. So they may believe that if they can do it for a short period, then people will change their behaviour. I'm not so sure that's going to happen.
And Paula, I suppose the significance of the measure lasting till April is because that's when the 50% top rate of income tax comes in. Is that right?
That's absolutely right, Matthew. I think the key point is that as things stand, any bonus paid by a bank, the actual banker, him or herself, won't actually be affected. It's actually a tax on the bank. But if the bonus is then paid after the 5th of April, you're then into the 50% regime. So in that case, the banker does actually suffer because they pay a higher rate of income tax at the end of the day.
So how's it actually going to work? Anything that's paid between now and the 5th of April is going to be subject to this levy on the bank, not on the banker.
Yes, that's right.
But does it also cover arrangements that are made between now and then?
Absolutely. It covers arrangements that are made between now and then and not actually paid. And I think the other thing to remember is that it's not actually applying to cash bonuses. It also applies to assets, benefits in kind, loans are caught as well, so you can't lend the money. That would also be caught as a bonus too. So it's wide-ranging in what it catches.
And what about if you're paid a bonus in shares? Are you affected also?
That's caught too, unless it's under one of the approved share schemes that are already in place.
And, Richard, are there any exceptions? Are there any bonuses that are not going to be hit by this levy?
We're struggling to find any loopholes at the moment. I'm sure people will look at that, but at the moment it seems fairly comprehensive.
What about so-called guaranteed bonuses?
I think if there's already an arrangement in place, then they seem to escape. But I think we'll need to look at the detailed legislation to see how that might work.
Well, let's broaden out our look at the PBR now by looking at all employees. Paula, there are also measures covering those people who are in a pension scheme, who have an employer who pays into that scheme. It affects high earners. Can you just talk us through it?
Well, that's right. Well, by way of background, high rate tax relief on pension contributions goes from 6th of April 2011. Now, in order to prevent people from putting large sums into their pensions between last budget day, 22nd of April, and the 5th of April 2011, we had what are known as anti-forestalling rules introduced. And what we've heard today is an extension to those anti-forestalling rules, whereby what happens is where an employer makes contributions on your behalf, then that contribution is taken into account in calculating your level of income to determine whether or not you fall within these anti-forestalling rules. So essentially what we have is an additional complication and further complexity that's really designed for anybody trying to increase their high rate tax relief under the current rules before the new rules come in from the 6th of April 2011.
And added complexity is, I think, as you're suggesting, the last thing that we need. So if you were earning less than £130,000 a year, as I understand it, you will not be caught by these new rules. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. So anybody earning under £130,000 or anyone who has income of less than £130,000 isn't caught. Then there's a little bit of headroom. You can have additional contributions of up to £20,000, whereby you're not actually caught. And so there can be the employer's contributions of up to £20,000 before you fall into the anti-forestalling rules. And what that generally means is that your higher rate tax relief is stopped with immediate effect, unless you already have regular contributions of a higher amount that actually have been going into your pension fund on a regular basis.
So, Claire, it sounds as if high earners earning between £130,000 and £150,000 are going to have to work out effectively what their employer contribution is to see if they are pushed through the £150,000 threshold at which they lose their ability to get higher rate tax relief dependent upon their whatever their previous contributions were. Is that right?
That's broadly right. And as Paula said, that's a lot more complexity and things just aren't as simple anymore in determining where you are. So a degree of certainty, I suppose, has gone out of the equation. The inclusion of employers' contributions in determining the level of income also means that you get into a situation where effectively you're denied tax relief on certain contributions, but you don't necessarily have the cash to make up the shortfall.
And if you are one of these people who get caught out because your employer pays an amount into your scheme that pushes you through £150,000, presumably you will get the tax relief as an employee, but you will have to pay it back through your tax return. Is that right?
Effectively, that's the difficult, that's the pain with it if you go through the levels. So that's right.
And just finally on pain for higher earners or wealthier people, there were some measures on inheritance tax today. At first glance, it didn't seem too serious. It just seemed to be a freezing of the nil rate band at 325,000. But there were some other measures, weren't there? Can you just explain what they were?
Well, that's right. The band was frozen at 325,000 when we were expecting it to go up to 350,000. So that's been clawed back. The other measures were some specific anti-avoidance measures to catch transfers into certain types of trusts. As things currently stand, when you make a transfer into a trust, you have a 20% inheritance tax charge. And our reading of it is that there are some specific avoidance schemes that look to avoid that. And these measures will attack those and prevent those.
A fewer ways to keep your inheritance or gifts that you're looking to make outside of the inheritance tax net.
That's right. Until we see the detail of those, we don't know sort of what other collateral damage those measures might have, because often when things are introduced to counter a particular avoidance or perceived avoidance, then they can have other implications which affect other more benign transactions. But we'll have to wait and see what happens on those.
As is often the case. Mm. And just finally, from all of you, any really unexpected or funny measures? I got excited about the bingo duty, but it turns out it doesn't actually affect the punter, it affects the bingo hall operator.
Right, I didn't realise that either, Matthew. I saw you get excited about that. I don't think there were any huge surprises. I think the revenue were trailing that there might be a few surprises in this announcement. Other than the banker's tax or banker payroll tax, I can't see any major surprises here. The continuing trend on anti-avoidance is that they're going to use the disclosure regime that they've got in place to stop what they see as unacceptable avoidance, and that's a continuing trend.
And Paula, any words of advice for higher earners, lower earners, anything to watch out for that hasn't been mentioned?
Yes, well, I quite like the provisions around electric cars and vans for employees, and the fact that the benefit in kind will be zero from 6th of April next year. Although I have to say, I'm not sure I could be persuaded to drive one yet.
Yes, I'm not sure whether the FT will invest in a fleet of G-whizzes, whatever they're called, either. But thank you all very much indeed for your wise words. That was Richard Proctor of Grant Thornton, Paula Higgleton of Deloitte, and Claire Evans of PwC. And for more explanation of the bonus levy, pension tax relief, and those inheritance tax rules, see FT Money this weekend and ft.com/PBR. And finally today, green tax breaks. A boiler scrappage scheme and an exemption of all electric cars from company car tax for 5 years were among a range of measures announced by the Chancellor to encourage consumers and businesses to become more energy efficient. But what are they actually worth to you? Tanya, you've been getting eco-friendly. Will you be better off?
Yes, on a whole, obviously, we will be. The boiler scrappage scheme is probably the one that stands out the most and probably the most headline grabbing. It's obviously introduced in the same vein as the car scrappage scheme that we saw before. What the government said is that they will give you £400 to replace an old G-rated boiler with a new energy efficient one. But it needs to be pointed out, it has to be a working G-rated boiler.
And G-rated, does that mean that it's inefficient?
It's basically a G-rated boiler would tend to be a boiler that's probably had for 15 years or more. It's a very old one. It tends to be under 70% efficient, really. So it is quite an old boiler.
And let's have a look at the other measures. If you have a wind turbine on the roof of your house or solar panels, you can now flog your excess electricity back to the national grid tax-free.
Yes, that's actually an existing scheme. It's called the government's Clean Energy Cashback Scheme. And what they're basically now saying that the payment, which is a fixed payment that they basically guarantee to anyone who decides to take part in the scheme, they basically said that it will now be a tax-free payment. So next year, they're saying on average, people who do this scheme will be having to borrow about £900 tax payment for it. And this will probably save you around £180 for a kind of basic rate taxpayer.
And finally, just very quickly, are we all going to be driving electric company cars?
Well, I think the government would like that to be the case.
What about electric bikes? I'm getting a bit sort of lazier and middle-aged, and I'm thinking if I can get one of those bikes that will use electricity, you know. Would they counsel along those little cars?
I don't think they were mentioned.
I don't think electric bikes were under the kind of current
my
scheme.
My boiler's not covered either here, so all I've got is the hot air to power my windmill, haven't I?
Yes, you're a major loser in this pre-budget report. Sorry to break the news. Thanks for that, Tanya. And if you'd like to know more about those energy-efficient measures, look out for Tanya's article in FT Money this weekend. But that's all for this week's FT Money show. Remember, you can get all of our pre-budget report analysis on our website, ft.com/money, and you can read and comment on our latest blog posts at ft.com/moneymatters. We'll be back next week with another financial lowdown in downloadable form, but until then, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from Tanya and Steve.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.